We are at the Wisconsin Corn and Soybean Expo in the Wisconsin Dells. We're talking trade, farm bill, biofuels, and the priorities of the corn, soybean, and hog producers here in the Badger State.
Live, it's Groundhog Day. Again? Via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk This Morning. We'll begin with a conversation with Ann Thompson from the National Corn Growers Association. Then it's Virginia Houston from the American Soybean Association. And right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drover's Eye, a handsome newsman, Davis Michelson. Now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Okay, I just got to admit, here I am at the Wisconsin Dells. Davis, you got to help me out. Dude,
right.
Can you somehow, some way, quick get me a pair of your Speedos because I forgot mine?
Oh, absolutely. I'll have my people, you know what, I'll have them hand deliver.
Okay, that would be great. The other thing is, I brought my recipes for groundhog.
Okay.
So if anybody needs those, I'm more than willing to share those recipes for groundhog later on in the show.
Ah, terrific. Because, you know, there's nothing like a good piece of groundhog.
Dude.
You know, you roast it up nice and slow. You cook it in a pie. There's so many ways to cook it.
That's right. That's right. You know, one thing that I've really discovered is smoked groundhog.
Ooh.
Dude, I'm telling you. Juicy. Mm-hmm. Juicy.
Mm-hmm. Sounds delicious.
Yeah. Yeah. Welcome to AgriTalk. We are at the Wisconsin Corn and Soy Expo. You know, I've been trying to figure out how many times I've been up here to the show. I'm thinking that this is like sixth or eighth time. We had a great panel this morning. We're going to get some highlights from that panel discussion on today's show. We've got reps from NCGA. We've got reps from ASA. And we're going to dig a little deeper into what is going on with those organizations here in the state of Wisconsin. So, got a lot of ground to cover, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, yeah. And what a great trade show. And what a great facility here at the Kalahari. I mean, this part of the building that we're in now, it's only like 3 years old, something like that. It's beautiful. It's spacious. It's fantastic.
Sounds like the joint's jumping, bro.
It is.
Kind of hear in the background a little bit.
It is. Absolutely. And the corn growers, Wisconsin corn growers, nice enough to give us a spot right here in a prime spot so that we can do our broadcast. All right. You ready? Should we get to the news?
Let's get to it. President Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy began face-to-face debt ceiling discussions at the White House yesterday. The meeting came as House Republicans have said they want to cut government spending in exchange for voting to increase the nation's borrowing limit, but have not agreed among themselves on what cuts they want. The White House has insisted that there will be no negotiating over the debt limit and reiterated yesterday that Congress should raise it without conditions.
Yeah, well, it's easy to decide that the spending should be cut.
Mm-hmm.
It's where the details then become very important because
right.
we're talking about cutting some mandatory programs. So they're going to be funding. It's just a question of how deep they're going to be cut.
Well, Chip, corn growers told congressional members and their staffs they must hold the line over Mexico's proposed ban on imports of GMO corn. During a congressional briefing, members of the National Corn Growers Association said if that ban takes effect, it will block most U.S. corn imports into Mexico and would be a significant blow to the American economy. Iowa's Chuck Grassley asked why the White House moved aggressively against Canada on dairy, but not so far against Mexico for its planned GMO corn ban. Chip, what makes the distinction there between the dairy and the corn?
I think it's because one is easier to understand than the other. GMO is something that AMLO is looking for, more scientific evidence. How many we've quit counting how many meals were served with GMO product.
Right.
I mean, the testing is proven.
Well, Senators John Thune of South Dakota and Minnesota's Amy Klobuchar reintroduced the Conservation Reserve Program Improvement Act. The bill bolsters the CRP by improving access to grazing, maximizing enrollment options for producers, and addressing implementation issues following the 2018 Farm Bill. Chip, this is interesting. BP will reportedly dial back its push into renewable energy. Disappointed in the returns from some of the oil giants' renewable investments, CEO Bernard Looney points to plans to pursue a narrower green energy strategy and place less emphasis on environmental, social, and governance goals. That's ESG, baby. They want to help clarify that those are not distracting the company from its ability to deliver profits. Analysts and some investors say BP's pledges to shift away from fossil fuels and into renewable energy risk handicapping the company's performance.
You know, it's interesting to hear Big Oil talking about ESG and and not just ignoring it, but taking it on and saying, listen, we can't sacrifice because of it.
Right. Well, United Airlines has formed a joint venture to develop and then commercialize a sustainable aviation fuel technology using ethanol as the feedstock. United Airlines, Tallgrass, and Green Plains will invest up to a combined $50 million in the venture. The venture is called Blue Blade Technology and will produce up to 135 million gallons of ethanol-based SAF annually. Chip, okay, there's some of that domestic demand coming around.
Yeah, that and that 135 million gallons, it's not like it's just it takes more corn to make that 135 million gallons of SAF than it takes to make 135 million gallons of ethanol. So this is real demand.
Well, and finally here, the National Chicken Council released its annual chicken wing report projecting Americans will eat a record-breaking 1.45 billion chicken wings during Super Bowl weekend. The figure represents an increase of 2% from last year's report, the equivalent of 84 million more wings than in 2022. Chip.
So, 84 million, yeah. I'll admit, I put them back on the menu, so there you go.
I'll
that
do my
kind
part.
Of accounts for it. All right, good stuff, Davis. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Sure
Let's
thing.
Bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. How you doing, bud?
Good morning, Chip. Happy Ground Dog Day.
Yeah, thank you. So where are you traveling to today? What you got going on?
So, Chip, I'm in New Orleans for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association Annual Convention and Trade Show all week. I know you've been at this show, and it's obviously the largest cowboy convention in the country, right? And I can't tell you how much better things feel when prices are running for cattle are 20% higher than they were a year ago. You know the mood has increased, right?
You bet. You bet. It'd probably be even that much better if there was some rain coming to the western corn belt.
Well, absolutely. I've talked to many of these guys down here that are really still suffering with this drought. I know you saw the cattle numbers, the inventory on Tuesday. Oklahoma really hard hit. They're down 7% in cows. But, you know, good news would be, and I listened to the Cattle Facts presentation this morning, they're projecting $200 a head average cow-calf profits. You know, they've been better than that in years past. They've also been worse than that. So we'll take that at this point, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Not only have they been worse than that, they've been a lot worse. And it feels Greg, it feels like that profitability on the cow-calf side is not going to be a 1 or 2 year thing. It's got some legs to it this time.
Well, absolutely, and that's due to these supply shocks that we're anticipating, meaning the numbers are down. And what they caution, the Cattle Facts analysts caution, is you're going to see a lot of volatility. You're going to see some wide price ranges between calves and feeders and feeders and fats. You know, it's not going to be an easy ride, but there should be more money down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, man, have fun down there in New Orleans.
Thank you, Chip.
All right, buddy. That is Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Watch for coverage from NCBA convention at www.drovers.com. Virginia Houston is up next right here on AgriTalk.
Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk.
Welcome back to the Wisconsin Corn and Soy Expo here at the Wisconsin Dells. Glad that you are with us this morning. Thank you to Wisconsin corn and soybean growers for making our coverage up here possible. We're going to get to a conversation with Virginia Houston from ASA here in just a moment. First, let's make time for this industry spotlight. Steve Trebetowski is the president of the Wisconsin Soybean Association, and he joins us right now. Steve, welcome. How are you?
Well, thanks for having me, Chip.
Glad that you are here. Tell me about the expo.
It's a premier event fact that we have multiple sponsors and things like that and attendees, and our attendance has great numbers this year. We're seeing that recovery from the COVID, and people are excited to be here. It's standing room only in a lot of the
shows. I couldn't believe it.
It's a great, great event.
Yeah, this morning I kicked things off taking a look at some of the policy issues. Like you said, standing room only in a big room is kind of hard to do at 8 o'clock in the morning, but you guys did it. That's fantastic. What's new at Wisconsin Soybean Association?
Well, with Wisconsin Soybean Association, obviously the forefront is this expo. There was a lot of planning going into this with our planning commission with the Corn and Soybean Expo, and it's all come together. That's a big part. Obviously, the biodiesels, things like that, biofuels. We have a pilot program with the city of Madison.
Yeah.
They have vehicles with the products, and it's going over very well. And there's a multiple other things, obviously, the oil in asphalt and things like that. So we're working on a lot of those projects. Obviously, the crush plant is always in the back of our mind.
Yep.
So.
Yep. You know, one of the things that I talked about this morning was that seems like the soy industry is going to go through some pretty dynamic changes. Dynamic doesn't always mean good. It's going to come with some challenges, but those challenges are all opportunities, aren't they, Steve?
Anytime we have demand for our product, you can't complain. Demand is the driving factor, and we need that, and it's so exciting. And we continue to create more value-added products for it, and it's a great time to be a soybean farmer.
You know, being a soybean farmer, being a promoter of the industry and the products that come from soybeans, you got to be careful because there's a balance, right? I mean, we're looking at all the new soybean oil demand that is coming in because of the bio-based diesel, the renewable diesel, sustainable aviation fuel. Good grief, there's big news there that United Airlines is making a big commitment there. Davis had that in the news. It's that balance. There's some anxiety over what are we going to do with all the meal?
You know, and that is a great problem to have. If we have more demand for our product than we know what to do with now, we will create those products. We'll grow the products. And demand is the number one driving factor.
Yeah.
So that's a great problem to have.
Yep.
And the fact that they announced that they want to put it in aviation fuel, I think is a great, great step in the right direction.
You know, when I've talked with USDA Secretary Vilsack about the potential in that market, he keeps throwing out 30 billion gallon. I keep thinking to myself, be careful what you're asking for, because that is a lot to satisfy. But let's show that it can be done, and then let's move forward and develop the product after that.
Yeah, and the American farmer has always been able to step up and create those products to fill those demands, no matter what it is, whether it's, you know, with the soybean market, we can grow those acres.
Yeah.
We can get it done.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it creates a great price and a great return for the farmer.
All right. Steve, if you want, stick around, but we're going to bring in Virginia Houston. She's the Director of Government Affairs at the American Soybean Association. Virginia, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Chip.
You
I'm
bet.
Glad to be here in tropical Wisconsin.
Tropical Wisconsin. Yeah, it's tropical everywhere you go around here. It's very cool. Thank you, Steve. We'll talk with you later. Okay, Steve brought up a great point about we can make the product. And when we're talking about soybean meal in particular, market development has got to be right at the top of the list of things at ASA.
Oh, absolutely. International markets are so critically important to the U.S. soybean grower. We're such an export-heavy crop to begin with.
Yep.
One of three rows of beans grown in the U.S. is destined for an overseas market. So we are constantly working to maintain markets, but also to develop new ones. So as you mentioned with this meal conundrum, we're looking at new markets that might be there for that meal. If that's Southeast Asia, if that's somewhere in Latin America,
yeah.
Where can we work with producers on the ground to create that demand for U.S. soybean meal?
Okay, I want to talk more about Southeast Asia, and we'll come back to it. But on the panel that we did this morning, we really didn't get an opportunity to talk about the opportunities in Latin America. That is a very it should be an interesting market to all soybean growers in the U.S.
Absolutely. Mexico is already a very highly developed market for us, but depending on the export year, it's either number one or number two behind the EU and China. But the rest of Latin America holds great potential with a growing middle class, a higher demand for livestock. you know, that means there's more opportunities for us to provide the meal to feed those animals for the diets that are very intensive in pork and for poultry. As there's more demand for that, there's going to be more demand for U.S. grown soybeans.
Yep. USDA now has an undersecretary for trade.
Yeah, they do.
It feels like it took a while for the Biden administration to get fired up about agricultural trade, but it feels like there's some momentum there now. Yes or no?
I would say that there definitely has been a shift since Alexis Taylor was confirmed to that undersecretary role. ASA has been very supportive of her the entire process. As soon as she was nominated, we were out the door ready to support her moving forward in that confirmation process. But also Doug McCaleb, who recently was also confirmed
as the
chief ag negotiator at USTR. So having those two in place, they are our biggest cheerleaders on the export market for U.S. agriculture. And we're just so thankful to have them out the door. You know, I think in the Senate Ag hearing earlier this week, Undersecretary Taylor mentioned in her third week on the job, and Doug's second week, they were in Mexico already. I know you'll talk to the corn growers later today, and I'm sure Mexico will come up.
Yep.
But, you know, they're out there. They're ready to fight those battles for us and do the work to make sure that we have access to those markets. So it does feel like there's been a shift since they came on board this year.
Feels like a committed pair. When
Absolutely.
It comes to agriculture.
Two very old hands who understand the issues, they understand trade, and they understand agriculture, and we really couldn't be in better hands.
Good. Good. Okay. Talk to me about Farm Bill. What about the priorities for ASA and the Farm Bill?
Yeah, so ASA went through a comprehensive Farm Bill policy priority development session with our members, with our boards in our states in 2022. And released our priorities last year, so we were one of the first out the gate with those. From a high level, you know, one of the important things is making sure the nutrition title remains in the Farm Bill. While most growers may not think of nutrition as part of the Farm Bill, we have seen the issues that arise when there are efforts to strip that title from the Farm Bill, and that means the Farm Bill will fail. And we think that the two issues together, nutrition and agriculture, have to be together in order to get a Farm Bill over the finish line and get that buy-in from members of Congress who may not truly appreciate the importance of farm programs because they don't represent farmers.
Yeah.
Looking at some of the different titles, we're probably going to be asking for an increase in the soybean reference price. I think our growers have expressed frustrations with us that the reference price didn't trigger during 2018. Mm-hmm. So that's something we'll be asking for conservation. You mentioned earlier in our panel that the Inflation Reduction Act took care of a lot of the spending issues around conservation funding, but ensuring the programs remain voluntary and incentive-based. But also on trade, one of the biggest issues I work on are the Market Access Program and the Foreign Market Development Program.
Okay.
Those are two critically important USDA's export promotion programs that ASA is a subscriber to that helps us carry out our work abroad. Underfunded and overutilized.
Yep.
So we are asking for a double of funding for both those programs because they are so critical to promoting our exports abroad.
Research and development spending, we've got to focus more on it than what we have in the last 3 farm bills.
Absolutely. And that is one of our priorities, is that we do support increased investments in USDA's REE research programs. So we're hopeful to see some of that included in the new farm bill as well.
Time is flying by on us here. We've got about a minute and a half left. I said that we were going to go back to Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about some of those markets because they're full of potential.
Oh, absolutely. You know, outside of China, 6 of our 10 top 10 export markets for U.S. soybeans are in the Southeast Asia region. Looking at Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, the Philippines. But there are so many other countries in that region that have untapped potential but need further development. You know, we mentioned Cambodia earlier, Malaysia, those sorts of countries where we are working on the ground to build up the knowledge and the need for U.S. soy, so hopefully down the road, thinking 10, 15, 20 years, we will develop those markets to be on par with others in the region.
Yeah, you guys, ASA has teams on the ground over in Asia showing producers of poultry, of pork, of fish, how the product can be used, and the potential on aquaculture alone, Virginia, it's mind-blowing.
It's fantastic, and we've been doing work for decades working on aquaculture in international markets, but also there's potential here in the U.S.
Sure.
We import between 65 to 85% of the seafood consumed in the U.S. but we don't produce a lot at all, and that's because the regulatory pathways for aquaculture are fairly difficult. Yep. So we're working to hopefully bring those barriers down.
Virginia, have a great time here at the Dells. All right. Thank you so much for
joining us. Chip.
All right. That is Virginia Houston, Director of Government Affairs for the American Soybean Association. Coming up next, we're going to talk corn, Wisconsin corn, and NCGA right here from the Wisconsin Dells.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, you know what, buddy? I'll admit, I haven't had a whole lot of time to check the markets this morning. Take me to the grains. What's going on?
Well, corn is under pressure, and we had a really big weekly export sales number. So that provided initial support at the end of the overnight session and early during daytime trade, but that's all gone for now, and we're trading solidly lower here at mid-morning. Soybeans, soy meal, they continue to trade to the upside. Forecasts in Argentina aren't very wet over the next 10 days to 2 weeks. Okay. So we're coming off some rains there, but still some concerns on the crop side. That's given price support. And then the wheat market, along with corn, it's down, and the weekly export sales numbers were poor there.
Okay, very good. Take me over to the livestock trade. What's happening there?
Well, pretty big gains, to be honest with
you,
across the entire sector. So cattle and hogs trading to the upside, moderate to strong gains in live cattle futures. The packers have been dragging their feet, but the expectation is that we will eventually see steady to firmer prices. So I think that today's rebound should help that cause a little bit. The feeders have just been incredibly volatile here recently, and big gains ahead of the cattle inventory report, the big fade of the report yesterday, and now a big price rebound today. So increased volatility, but the longer term price outlook there is definitely bullish given the reduction in numbers. And then on the hog side of things, we are seeing price strength this morning, especially in the front end of the market.
Well, it's good to see there. We need to see a lot more coming back. Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
Tell you what. There's a whole bunch of people getting their batteries charged here in the Wisconsin Dells at the 2023 Wisconsin Corn and Soy Expo. Thank you so much. We're going to get to a conversation with Ann Thompson from NCGA here in just a moment. But first, let's make time for this industry spotlight. Joining us now, Mark Hoffman, president of the Wisconsin Corn Growers Association. Mark, welcome.
How are you?
It's good to see you.
Nice to be here. Nice to have you here.
All right. So let's start with what it means to be a member of the Wisconsin Corn Growers.
We as a board do what the members don't have time to do.
Yeah.
We take the time out of our busy schedules to do it for them. It's a challenge sometimes because we all farm just like everybody else, and it's cold out here right now.
That's right. That's
so
right.
We're hoping that the cold kind of brings some more people just because it'll get them out of the cold.
It's a team effort.
It is.
It's a team effort.
Big time.
And if you're not so inclined to be on the board, you can still be active and have your opinion heard, your voice heard, just by simply being a member.
Yep, exactly. When I got on the board, it was because I wanted to give back to my industry.
Yeah.
I had been on town government, and I had 22 years of that was enough for me, and I said, I'm going to give back to my industry now, and that's when I got involved with Corn Growers. I traveled out to D.C. I've known Ann for quite a while, and traveled out there before I was even a board member.
Yeah.
And they were kind of grooming me to get to where I'm at today.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, the corn growers have a tendency of doing that.
Uh-huh,
I don't know if you've noticed or not.
I kind of figured that out.
All right. So those trips to D.C. that you've done, what does it mean to the membership of the Wisconsin Corn Growers?
That's where I say, we take the time to do what needs to be done out there. Hopefully we're taking the same voice to D.C. that they want us to take.
Yeah.
And it's, we try to, you know, it's interesting. The first time I went out there, I'm like, man, that's a lot of concrete.
Yeah.
You know, that's a farmer deal.
I hear you.
But, you know, we do what the farmer doesn't have time to do, like I said, and it's enjoyable. And, and we get to meet nice people like Ann and the rest of the crew at NCGA, and they take us under their wing and kind of train us a little bit.
Gotcha. So let's talk issues. What's at the top of the list for the Wisconsin corn growers now?
The Mexico deal with that. We've got a lot of ethanol plants and stuff in Wisconsin, and if they quit taking GMOs, they're not going to take the DDGs and stuff too. Right. So we're going to lose out on a lot of stuff right here in Wisconsin.
Let's bring her into the conversation, shall we? We've got Ann Thompson. She is the PAC and Policy Strategy Director there for NCGA. Ann, welcome.
Thank you, Chip. It's great to be here.
You bet. Ann was on part of the panel that we did this morning as well. And, of course, Mexico's ban or proposed ban, proposed isn't even right, planned ban of genetically modified corn is coming through. Give us the details of it. What's the status and what are the odds that this is going to happen?
Well, I'm not a betting girl, but I feel like we have reason to be optimistic. You know, NCGA has been working very closely with Congress and the administration on this issue, and I'd say it's gotten a lot of attention as of late. Just this Tuesday marked the one-year mark from when the decree should go into effect, January 31st, 2024. So we took an opportunity to really draw some attention to Capitol Hill and with the administration on that kind of reverse anniversary. And I think we're getting a lot of traction. We've seen movement. We've seen the administration take stronger positions than they were back in the fall. And so we're very appreciative of kind of where they've come on this issue. And we feel like we have momentum and reason to be optimistic.
What? How? Why? Why is Obrador, President Obrador, pushing this?
These are questions I am not equipped to answer, Chip. You know, we know that biotechnology is you know, gives our farmers tools in their toolbox to grow and to feed a growing population. You know, Andy Jobman, who was on our panel this week, likened it to taking back electricity and starting to use candles again.
Yeah.
Just doesn't make sense.
That's good. That's good right there. And it's one of those issues that if he is looking for more scientific evidence, I said it earlier, we've stopped counting. It used to be kind of a cool thing. So many, you know, X number of meals fed around the world with genetically modified corn. I think we've quit counting because I don't know if we'd be into the quadrillions by now. And there's no evidence. It's just the strangest thing. Such a positive trade partner for us, and throwing up or raising an issue that isn't an issue. It's something for the corn growers to really deal with.
Absolutely. It has been top of mind. It has been all hands on deck.
It means a lot. Have you got your number?
Economic impact, if this decree went into effect, would be a loss of $73.89 billion in U.S. economic output over 10 years and would lead to an annual job loss of 32,217 jobs.
Just call
this
it
is enormous.
Just call it $8 billion a year. Do you want to take $8 billion out of the out of the U.S. farm economy?
Not a chance. Not a chance. And the sad part is when we started USMCA, everything looked perfect.
Yeah.
You know, and then to get kicked like this is just beyond anything.
Okay. So I mentioned the President Obrador. What is his status?
That's a great question. So he is Mexico has term limits. He is a one-term president, and they will hold another election in June of 2024.
Right.
So theoretically, 6 months after the decree going into effect. So we really don't have time to wait him out on this.
We don't have time. But boy, if there's one more extension, then you got to look at what the candidates are saying. And if the candidates are saying, listen, we're not going to pursue this ban of a GMO, problem solved. But you can't wait him out.
We can't bank on that.
No.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable that we're having to deal with it. Okay, other farm bill issues and that you are focused on at NCGA. What do you got?
Yeah, you know, crop insurance is always top of mind for our membership. We really want to protect crop insurance. We know that, you know, that's always a bit of a target when the farm bill comes around, and so that's a huge priority for us. We'd also like to see the producer safety net strengthened. Still kind of working out details and proposals as to what that could look like, but you know, taking a lot of input and doing our due diligence to see how the cards could line up there.
Yeah. The issue with Title I, Mark, and the safety net, it's dollars.
Right.
It's funding for that thing. The way that the safety net works with the Olympic averages, the reference prices are going up. I mean, it's basically $2 billion more than Title I's going to cost over the next 10 years. I think that's what it is. Anyway, so the cost of the program is already going up, but it really doesn't provide a whole lot of safety coverage the way it stands right now, does it? Because of the price structure
yeah. And stuff. Yeah, exactly. The commodity prices that we're at right now, I mean, you were just on the radio before talking about them. It raises our cost of part of our cost of production with the crop insurance.
Yeah.
It's kind of pricey.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's like auto insurance. How do you do without?
Right. Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
With the kind of dollars we exchange anymore, you have to have protection.
Yeah.
No matter what.
Yeah, that's right. I think it is good enough in the current budget and spending environment to protect crop insurance. I don't think we've got a lot of room to make a big ask here, is there?
Well, no, I don't think so, because it's the give and take.
Yes.
I mean, if we want
that's
this,
it.
They're going to take it away from over here.
That's it.
And we'd like to have some more here, but we don't want to lose it over here either.
Right.
So it's a battle. That's why we have to fight for it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The future for ethanol, I think, is getting brighter again.
I think so.
Well, give me your thoughts on it.
I know in our area it is, because we're getting another ethanol plant coming back online. We had lost one two years ago. And it really threw a bind into the local market.
Sure did.
But I think that, you know, with ethanol coming back, getting into the picture here.
With the sustainable aviation
exactly,
fuel and everything. Yep.
Exactly. Out of a group in Madison.
Yeah.
Right here in the state of Wisconsin.
Wow.
Yep. Exactly. And I think, you know, people, as long as they get their flight from point A to point B, I don't think they care what kind of fuel is getting them there,
right.
As long as they get there.
Yep, I agree.
We kind of had this discussion with a couple of our group members, is let's not tell them what we're using. Don't give them something to argue about.
Yep.
You know, they're getting there safely.
Yeah.
They don't know what's in there for fuel right now. Why should we change it?
Right. But it is in the spotlight,
exactly.
Sustainable aviation fuel,
it is.
The whole ESG movement. We talked about that on the panel this morning, Ann. When United comes out and makes a big deal about it, there is demand there to be met.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And a lot of companies, you know, have set very lofty goals for themselves in this ESG movement, and corn farmers offer a way to help get them to those goals. And, you know, that's a fantastic opportunity for us.
You know, that is such a excellent way of putting it right there. These companies have set some lofty goals, and the way for them to get there is through corn growers. That's how you get paid. That's how this whole thing has the potential to work for corn growers going forward. You guys, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
All right. That is Mark Hoffman, president of Wisconsin Corn Growers, and, of course, Ann Thompson with the NCGA. Davis and I are going to be right back to wrap up this morning's AgriTalk.
The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
So put your little hand in mine. There ain't no hill or mountain we can't climb.
Happy Groundhog's Day, everybody!
Woo-hoo!
AgriTalk, everybody. Davis Michelson here from my own personal beet laboratory, Chip Flory, out on the road in Scotty today. Sounds like a great event.
Oh, it is. It's fantastic. Like I said, this is not the first time I've been up here. It's I think I might be approaching double digits on the number of times I've been to the Wisconsin corn and soybean growers over the years. And this expo just continues to grow. And like Mark was talking about, well, and Steve as well, there is a vibe. There's a vibe happening at this event. You can feel it. I think people are just really, really anxious to get back into these annual meetings that, you know, what were they, Davis? They were an annual reunion for the decision makers, but it was also a whole lot of people showing up to see people that they hadn't seen since the last expo. We're back to it. And as a matter of fact, guys like Mark just walking by points at you and says, hey, it's good to see you again.
Good to see you too, Mark. Enjoy the show.
All right.
Groundhog Day, just a little bit of housekeeping here. Apparently, Punxsutawney Phil emerged reluctantly but alertly and said, I definitely see a shadow, six more weeks of winter. Chip.
Well, I think we have this conversation every year. We have the conversation. It's six more weeks to the end of winter. Not just meteorologically, but, you know, kind of like on the calendar, too.
Sure. Yeah, that groundhog.
Way to go, you know? Punxsutawney. You're great, man.
You can't lose.
That's
right. your conversations today, Corn Growers, Soybean Association, the whole bit there covered a wide scope there, but there was sort of a central theme. It feels like there's an awful lot of optimism surrounding biofuels. I'm going to swing us back to a story I had in the news. United Airlines forming a joint venture with Tallgrass and Green Plains. United will invest a combined $50 million in this venture.
Right.
Hoping to produce up to 135 million gallons of ethanol-based sustainable aviation fuel annually. This is a big deal, and when we talk about optimism, this feeds directly into that, no?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. ADM has made a similar investment. What was that, 18 months ago? Gevo Energy down Cedar Rapids. They've committed. There is a lot of ethanol production that's already been committed to the sustainable aviation fuel industry, and it's not one for one. It's not like you can take 1 gallon of ethanol and make 1 gallon of fuel for the sustainable aviation fuel. There is a multiple involved there. So you have to get over the idea of what this costs, because Davis, and I can't believe that I'm saying this, but the cost is secondary. The cost is secondary. Ann brought it up in the last segment. It's the ESG and the lofty goals of some of these companies that are out there. United is one of them. United has been putting money where their mouth is and making the investment in products like sustainable aviation fuel, and they're teaming up with some of the ethanol producers out there to make sure that it's doing it. Now, I'm sitting here across from the booth at the biodiesel. Hi, everybody. I see you listening over there.
They did. Hello. Hello, biodiesel.
So there's obviously the bio-based component, or the biodiesel and the soybean oil-based component of the sustainable aviation fuel as well. So this one crosses both lines. And I think for a long time, there was a misconception that sustainable aviation fuel was bio-based diesel component only. Mm-hmm. No, there is ethanol involved in that whole effort. And when you talk about the total market for that being up around 35 billion gallons, and the thing is, what Mark said, I think, is absolutely right. There are going to be some out there that are saying, listen, I really don't care what that jet engine is burning.
You're
just
right.
Get me from point A to point B and get me there safely.
Well,
I agree. I'm all in on that. But, Davis, if United is burning X percent of sustainable aviation fuel and Delta isn't, who's going to be making the big deal out of we're better than they are? United.
Right.
I mean, it's going to become a competition. It becomes a race at some point in with the consumers that keep the ESG issues in mind when they're making decisions.
Right.
This it's not going away. It's not going away.
Well, and you know, that maybe tell them that they just flew to Pittsburgh on biofuel. Once they land, and then say, hey, and by the way, there's biofuel for your car, too. You can use it all the way home if you like. Maybe stop and get some delicious, clean-burning ethanol.
It tastes good, too.
Don't drink the ethanol, Chip. Come on now.
Again, one more time, do not drink the ethanol.
I need to remind you. Right. You keep forgetting, don't you?
I do.
That's why you're so fired up. I love it.
But, yeah, the efforts are there. The investment is there. The movement behind sustainable aviation fuel, the movement behind renewable diesel. I know that there is disappointment in the industry over the proposed renewable volume obligations, the blending mandates from the bio-based diesel stakeholders. I understand that. But I think the demand and the investments that are already in place, and we've got BP. BP is talking about its shift to an ESG model, they're putting up a little bit of a fight against that. I guess I would say
they're pushing back. Is what it sounds like. Yeah,
they're pushing back. But that's an admission that this is having an influence on what on how they're doing business. I think it's fantastic. It is something to really watch. Hey, we're going to be right back here this afternoon, Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin Corn and Soy Expo. Yeah. We'll have Mike North with us.